And this is KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's Monday, December 8th, 28 degrees under partly cloudy skies and 28 degrees also in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast here for the Wasatch Back. As we go throughout your Monday, we're looking at a mixture of sun and clouds, more sunshine developing as we go throughout the afternoon hours. Temperatures climbing to the low 40s there in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the mid 40s for us in the Heber Valley. As we head into your Tuesday, look for a mixture of clouds and sunshine. We'll see a few more clouds building up into the afternoon. There is a slim chance that we could see an isolated rain or snow shower popping up around the Park City area by your Tuesday afternoon, but it should not amount to anything significant. Temperatures will be climbing into the mid-40s after starting off in the mid-20s in the Park City area on your Tuesday. Tuesday will feature low 20s to start in the Heber Valley with highs climbing into the upper 40s by the afternoon hours on Tuesday. Again, a mixture of sun and clouds and a slim chance of an isolated rain shower developing late in the day. As we go into your Wednesday, we'll start off with a few extra clouds out there and that slim chance of an isolated rain or snow shower in the area. Temperatures will be right around the freezing mark to kick off the day, but we do warm it back up into the mid to upper 40s by the afternoon hours in Park City and highs in the low 50s. For us in the Heber Valley. That warming trend will continue into the second half of your week. As we get to your Thursday, we start off with those temperatures just below freezing once again, but as we go throughout the day, high temperatures warm to near 54 in the Park City area. We'll see those highs climbing into the mid-50s in the Heber Valley. By the time we make our way towards the end of the work week, high temperatures will be near 54 in Park City with lots of sunshine, and we'll have those high temperatures in the mid-50s for us in the Heber Valley, again with plenty of sunshine expected across the area. Your upcoming weekend right now looks fairly quiet with lots of sunshine, temperatures dropping down into the 20s for morning lows, and we'll see those highs in the upper 40s to low 50s in Park City for your Saturday and Sunday with high temperatures into the low to mid 50s for the Heber Valley. As we look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back, I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And with a look in the backcountry and the fun with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Nikki. Good morning, Nikki.
Good morning. So yesterday was a bit quieter in the backcountry. We had a pretty busy weekend, but we got a few more reports of avalanches that trickled in. Most of them occurred on Saturday or Friday night, but a few occurred yesterday. Yesterday, there was one party that remotely triggered a slab avalanche along the Park City ridgeline closer to Lake Desolation or the Bear Trap region. Today, we're just dealing with one main problem. That's the persistent weak layer. So right now, we've got that old weak faceted snow from October, November that's sitting underneath all that storm slow snow. This problem extends through both upper elevations and mid elevation terrain, so both should be approached with caution. Though today, upper elevation slopes should be treated with the most caution. These areas received the most wind over the past few days and the snow, so avalanches in this setup can be triggered remotely from a distance or from somewhere along the ridge line. And then on top of that problem, we've got the wind-drifted snow. So any slopes that have received a bit more wind, they could initially break in the wind drifts and then step down more deeply into that persistent weak layer. For those reasons, today we've got a considerable avalanche danger at upper elevations facing west through north through east, where those old weak faceted snow are now buried 1 to 2 feet deep. And then at mid elevations, we're dealing with some wind-drifted snow.
And so with the sunshine and warm temperatures in the forecast, what's that going to do to the snowpack? Help it or hurt it?
Short term, help it. So we're going to see signs of instability start, or signs of stability to start to increase. So we might see less avalanches, cracking, collapsing. But long term, with this cold, dry weather, we'll see the entire snowpack kind of start to weaken and could eventually be a problem long term. So short term, things will stabilize. Long term, it could be an issue.
Okay. Nikki, thank you.
Yeah, have a good one.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with the director of the Summit County Health Department, Phil Bondurant. Later on, a winter sports update with U.S. Ski and Snowboard Courtney Hawkins. Ballet West Academy Park City Campus Principal Allison DeBona calling in with details on the annual Nutcracker performance. That's happening at the Park City Eccles Theater. And Hunter Klingensmith on the Swanner Eco Center has more on their Wetland Supermarket and Wild Winter Market that's coming up. In the studio now with an update from the Summit County Health Department, I have Director Dr. Phil Bondurant. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with measles. What's the latest here?
Yeah, measles continues to find its way into the headlines here in the state of Utah. Fortunately, we have not had that headline in Summit County, but as of this morning, we've had 105 cases in the state of Utah. And, you know, we continue to dedicate an entire team to this response. And what I mean by that is the constant monitoring, checking in with our partners at the hospital and at the school districts, just to make sure that while we never want to see measles in our headlines or in our schools, we do anticipate that given the way that it is spreading around the state, that there will come a time when we at the Summit County Health Department are dealing with measles.
Yeah, and it sounds like people don't know they have measles till much later. I mean, so they're around other people spreading it?
Yeah, the incubation period for measles is quite long. It's one of the most infectious diseases that we know. So by the time that some of those more commonly known symptoms pop up, like the spots and the fever, the incubation period has taken place and the contagious period is already at full swing. So a lot of times people have been exposed, they're exposing others before they even know they're sick.
Yeah. So how are you working, the health department, working with school districts?
Yeah, our superintendents, the Winter Sports School, Wileman, we met back in August and built a blueprint that we agreed to abide by when the time came, if the time comes, and they've been fantastic. The support of public health in Summit County remains at the tip top of the tier. And I know that our superintendents are focused on the health and safety of their students and their staff. And so with that, we've got a plan that abides by the state measles plan. It's an approved plan that's been adopted by the CDC. And we continue to stay in constant conversation, making sure that we know what the schools need. We've provided specialty vaccination clinics for staff. We've been present in the schools as requested, providing updates and information, Q&As to the Parent Teachers Association, to staff, and just really being as present as we can in this conversation, recognizing some of the volatility around it.
Yeah. The health department still offering free or low cost MMR vaccines?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you are insured, it is 100% covered. If you are uninsured or unable to pay, we have programs in place that can make sure that no one is ever turned away for a vaccine.
All right. And any effects from the vaccine? I mean, sometimes you get a sore arm. Is that about the extent of it?
Yeah, it's just the same as any other vaccine or immunization. And in fact, in most instances, the efficacy and safety of the MMR vaccine is what is used to measure against other vaccines. It's been tried and true. The science behind it is fairly convincing, and we would encourage anyone that has questions about the MMR vaccine, its efficacy, the protections that it provides, just give us a call, 435-333-1500. We can put you in touch with a public health nurse who's very well versed in this topic.
All right, any updates with flu and maybe COVID going around?
Yeah, you know, flu is really interesting this year. Nationally, it's hovering around a 50% protection rate and roughly 70% against hospitalization in children and 45% in adults, meaning it's keeping that many individuals who come down sick or test positive out of the hospital. Our state is low by CDC standards in the number of cases, but when we look to the east, our neighbors in Colorado are high. One thing that I continue to watch is, you'll recall our conversations in October around our Vaxigo clinics, is we encourage folks to be vaccinated the first week of October based on previous data. And as we look at that and the number of individuals and the uptake that first part of October, you would anticipate that full protection is around this time of year, and yet we have not seen that significant spike in Summit County. Now, there's a number of different things that could be contributed to, and we would need to further evaluate that data to make sure that was the case. But as we've looked at previous years compared to now, our flu rates are very low, almost stable, and we're not seeing that traditional spike that we've seen post Thanksgiving and as we enter into the Christmas season. So it's really interesting. Flu continues to remain somewhat of an anomaly. We haven't seen any real normalization with that yet here in Summit County, but I do want to commend the efforts of our clinical staff and our epidemiologists in identifying areas where we can do our best to kind of curb that spike and make sure we're affording individuals that need it the most the protection at this critical time of year.
All right. Well, again, vaccines will not prevent somebody from contacting the flu and or COVID. However, you're saying it's got a 50% efficacy, I mean, effective, which is that normal or is it sometimes higher?
It varies really depending on the mutations that occur during the season. You know, we base all of our information off of what's occurred in the southern hemisphere. And of course, by the time it reaches us, there's been some mutations and variations that pop up. But the important part about the flu is, yes, it may or may not prevent you from getting ill, but it definitely prevents you from experiencing the most severe complications and symptoms associated with flu. And when you think about what that does in terms of our hospitalizations, if it keeps you out of the hospital, then it's a successful vaccine. We should anticipate there's going to be sickness and illness this time of year. That's just part of being human, and our immune systems are built to fight that off. But most importantly, we want to keep people out of the hospital, especially this time of year. We should be around our family and friends, those that we love the most, spending time celebrating all the good that's come from this past year, and the flu vaccine helps you do that.
Okay. So besides the vaccines, wash your hands, stay home if you're sick.
Oh, absolutely. Those are tried and true methods of limiting disease.
Okay. You have a mental health survey underway. Tell me about that.
Yeah, the Summit County Mental Wellness Alliance, which is a branch of the health department, is partnering with the Park City Community Foundation and the Katz Amsterdam Foundation to launch our mental health community survey. Now, this survey is in English and in Spanish, and it's completely anonymous. And the purpose of this survey is to help us better understand our community needs, identify opportunities, and strengthen our impact related to mental health in Summit County. This has been done every 2 years, as I mentioned, and some of the previous successes that have come from these surveys is we've established our MCOT, our Mobile Crisis Outreach Team. We've increased the number of Spanish-speaking clinicians, and of course, we've increased access to services here in Summit County. The most recent data tell us that 1 in 5 students in our county are struggling with mental health, and nearly 40% of individuals are receiving care inside of Summit County. Now, that is an interesting statistic to look at, because in some line of thought, you may think, wow, we have almost 40% of individuals that are struggling with mental health. But on the flip side, we've worked hard to remove the stigma around receiving mental health care. And much like if you had the flu, or if you break a bone or something doesn't feel right, you visit your primary care physician, we hope that people are starting to realize that it's okay if things don't feel right mentally or with your behavioral health. And so while we don't want to see that number necessarily grow, we understand that when we remove the stigma around something, we should expect increases in the number of people receiving care. So this survey has been an important part of identifying some of these trends, getting services into the schools, services into the community for those that need it most, so that just like we attend to our physical health, we can attend to our mental health as well.
Yeah, we both remember how difficult at one point it was to get mental health care. Is that changing?
It is. It's changing dramatically with partners like the Community Foundation, People's Health Clinic, the work that the health department is doing. And our relationship with the University of Utah, we have seen a tremendous increase in the number of providers and availability here in Summit County. And when you think about a population of roughly 45,000 people, and if 40% are receiving behavioral health care, that tells you that there is opportunities for those in the community to receive care in a timely manner, especially those that are in a critical crisis that need that immediate care.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about CHIP. This is the Children's Health Insurance Program. Tell us a little bit about this. I mean, it's something that it's a state program that you run here locally?
Yeah, so when we refer to the CHIP, we're talking about the Community Health Improvement Program. But the Children's Health Insurance Program is ran through Medicaid Medicaid. And obviously that has impacts on a number of different programs like WIC, The different programs that we offer around vaccines for children and those types of things. And so we're keeping a close eye on that. And as part of that CHIP, we have our own community health improvement program where we look to address some of these issues as it's related to improving food and nutrition access for an evolving community and increasing immunization coverage to reduce preventable diseases. So those types of programs and are really going to be used to direct what the health department does for the next 5 years. The Community Health Improvement Plan is a five-year guiding document that was driven organically from members of the community stakeholders back in June that we hope to present to the Board of Health on December 15th for final approval. That will be used as doctrine to guide how we ask for and receive funds from our county council, how we use state funds to really impact social drivers of health in our community to make sure that we're building a healthier community for all.
Okay. Let's see. People can find that plan then online?
Yeah, after the 15th, once the Board of Health has the final say in making sure that it aligns with what they took away from our retreat and that it accomplishes what we've set out to do in the next 5 years. We'll get that approved and we'll have that available on the website.
Okay. Wanted to ask you, have we got those SNAP payments back on track? Everything working well with that?
Yeah, we don't have too much influence over the SNAP program in the Summit County Health Department, but that in that vein of thought, we do have, it does somewhat impact WIC when we see federal reductions. And through the work of our WIC team, we had a plan in place. The state really stepped up and filled a gap created by the federal decisions, and we were able to continue providing WIC at the highest level without too much impact to the families that are served.
All right. Looking ahead to 2026, what are the health department's goals for the coming year?
Yeah, we have a big year ahead of us. We just finished our previous strategic plan that was coming off the back end of COVID, a five-year plan that got us into a space where we could receive public health accreditation from the Public Health Accreditation Board. And so we will be focusing on our FAB accreditation completion in 2026. As we just mentioned, we're going to begin implementing the CHIP over a five-year timeline across three key priorities that will span 5 years and really take us to the next level. And then, of course, when you finish one strategic plan, you start another so that you have guiding documents that really ground you in who you are as an organization, provide an identity, but most importantly, make you responsible stewards of public monies. And when we have data in a CHIP plan, when we have a plan in a strategic plan, I feel as though we're set up for success in 2026 and beyond.
Okay. You didn't mention kind of a shift to the Skull Candy building. I'm guessing that's going to be something that's going to happen as well, huh?
Yeah. I continue to work with Shane and Jana, our county manager and deputy county manager, on this process. There's a lot of moving parts in that building. You know, the first floor, I believe, is finalized in what's going to go into that building, and now they're looking at how to best occupy the space on the second floor. And we're lucky enough that the health department is a part of that conversation. Shane and Jana are listening to the space needs of the health department and some of the space needs that are occurring with our partners in our building at People's Health Clinic. And we're working through the best way to maximize the space and make both organizations as efficient as possible.
Okay, so but it sounds like you're keeping space at the Quinns Junction office.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I wanted to ask you about that public health accreditation. I mean, is this something that all county health departments are required to do or just something you are taking on?
It is not a requirement. It is something that we have voluntarily taken on. And what it does is it measures our efforts against a national benchmark to see where we stack up in terms of where a health department should be operating. My belief is that we were already doing much of the work that public health accreditation requires. However, it was not documented and we did not receive credit for that. It's important for public monies to be validated in the way they're spent. And when a community looks at their health department and the amount of resources that we receive, there's a certain trust that goes into knowing that we are accredited. That's not to say that before we weren't or that we weren't using money in a responsible way, but on the back end of COVID, we didn't really have an identity. We spent a couple of years really focusing on the pandemic response. what better time than on the back end of something like that to celebrate the work that a health department is doing, to bring confidence, to rebuild trust in the community where it has been strained, and to really celebrate the staff and what they're doing on a regular basis. And for me, in a very selfish way, I wanted to evaluate our processes to make sure that we had a quality improvement process, that we were looking at ways to be more efficient, that we are evaluating the work we are doing, and most, you know, helping most of the staff understand the why of why we do the work we do. What is it that we're trying to influence and change for the good? And most, you know, how do we impact social change in a positive way?
Okay. Finally, you've got a food drive happening. Tell me about this.
Yeah, I think it's a community-wide food drive. You know, this past month has been a bit wild with some of the things that have taken place at the federal level around funding. And this is just a quick reminder that as a community, we showed our true colors. We came out in full force, and the donations were tremendous, helping families get through that Thanksgiving holiday. But this is not a sprint, it's a marathon. Food insecurities continue to exist year round. We have wonderful food banks here in Summit County that do a great job of ensuring that families are fed, they have nutritious meals, they have quality meals that individuals are in their cupboards when they go home. And so this is just a quick reminder, all county locations, all health department locations have drop boxes. There are, you can directly donate to the food banks. You can do that in monetary means. You can do that with non-perishable foods. But if you're at the grocery store and you can donate, every little bit helps. When you buy one box of macaroni and cheese, buy another box and plan to donate that. It, a little bit goes a long way. And I know that our food banks and those families that need it most this time of year would be greatly appreciative of that.
All right, Phil, thanks so much. Happy holidays and see you next year.
Same to you. Thank you.
Well, in the studio now with our first update from U.S. Ski and Snowboard of the season, I have the Director of Communications, Courtney Harkins. Good morning.
Morning.
So let's start with Alpine team, some good and bad news there.
Yes. We'll start with the bad news, which is probably not the best way to start a Monday morning, but our favorite Lauren Masuga, local girl, won a massive gold medal potential for the Olympics this year, did get injured last week while we were in Copper. So I spoke with her. She's doing well. She, you know, her spirits are still very high, which is great, and she'll come back even stronger. But definitely a disappointing setback at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I saw her celebrating though. Her brother Daniel Foran at the Copper races, so she was rooting him on.
Exactly. It was nice. I saw her the other day at Birds of Prey when we were in Beaver Creek, and she's still out there cheering. She'll be our biggest cheerleader as we head into the games.
Okay. Sounds like she's going to have surgery then rehab.
Exactly. Yeah, she'll have surgery out in Vail.
All right. Will she be back on skis this season?
Or? Not this season. It takes, you know, it's a knee injury, so it takes a little while to recover. So we'll see her a lot in the gym, and yeah, she'll get strong on that way.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the North American World Cups. Michaela Schifrin again, I think it was, 104?
Yeah, 104. She's just continuing to dominate slaloms, which has been amazing. She did so well in Copper, which was our first time hosting a World Cup there in more than 25 years, I believe. And she got to win in front of the home crowd. She's from just a half an hour away, so it was really great to see. And then was just in Tremblant over the weekend, and she did quite well, a couple of top sixes, as well as Paula Moltzen, who is, you know, from Minnesota, originally lives in Vermont, but is skiing quite well, too.
Okay. Paula, more of the GS skier then.
She's a split of both, actually. Okay. Yeah, she's definitely, you know, talk about the Olympics as a medal potential in both of those.
Okay. And then any other results you wanted to highlight?
Yeah, we were just at the Seafull Birds of Prey. I got back late last night. It's been, but it was great. And Ryan Cochran Siegel grabbed a podium. Another Vermont boy, Olympic silver medalist from 2022. So he, look out for him to be strong this year. And then we start women's speed this coming week in St. Moritz. So Michaela Schifrin will be racing that, racing the Super G, and then we'll see the season debut of Lindsey Vonn.
Okay, let's move on to cross country. Jesse Diggins, of course, just really racking it up.
Yeah, which is great. This is she announced right before the season started that this is going to be her last season. She'll be retiring at the last race after the Olympics. But she grabbed two podiums in Trondheim over the weekend, which is really, really great to see, and officially qualified for the Olympics.
Okay. Any other qualifications there on the cross-country team?
Yeah, there's quite a few coming. It's a lot of the World Cups that are going. It's a little less trials-focused in skiing and snowboarding and a lot World Cup-focused. So we are starting to accumulate more and more folks.
All right. And let's have a look at freestyle. What's happening there?
Yeah, moguls just kicked off in Ruka, Finland, as did aerials. And Tess Johnson took home her win, which is great. And Olivia Giacchio was third. And our own Nick Page from Park City was also third, which was really cool to see him back on the podium. And then they'll come back for training now. We've had some events canceled over in Europe. So they'll be here for a little while. So look out for them over at Deer Valley and at the UOP. And then Chris Lillis, who lives down in Salt Lake City, was third over the weekend, and then they'll head to China. Okay. And moguls is actually happening, I believe, right now. So tune in to keep up with what's going on today.
Okay, Chris Lillis again, an aerial freestyle skier.
Yes, exactly.
The canceled events, is that snow related?
Yeah, it's a combination of snow and then finances.
Okay. What's happening with the freeski team?
Frisky team is getting rolling. Troy Podmilsak, who's from Park City as well, just grabbed his first World Cup win in Big Air in China last week, which was really fun to see. He'll be a force this year, especially in that Big Air competition. And then Snow League, which is Sean White's new event that he started last year. It was only snowboarders last year, and this year they're allowing some freeskiers in for halfpipe. And so Nick Gepper, who lives in Salt Lake, took fourth. He took a really big crash, but is doing okay, and he should be back in action in time for the next events coming up here in the coming weeks.
All right. Sean White felt like we needed different events to make it exciting.
Exactly. We fully endorse it. We need more events for freeski and snowboard. And so, you know, any more opportunities for these athletes to get results and prize money and all of the above is fantastic for us.
So what's he putting up the prize money?
Yeah, he's a lot of investors and sponsors. So it's been really cool to see for our athletes.
Yeah. So any idea how many events? And do they conflict with the World Cup?
They don't, which is good. They've worked with us to make sure that it doesn't conflict with World Cup, doesn't conflict with X Games. And it's an invite-only event, so it's not all of our athletes, but it's quite a few of them. It was just snowboarding last year. They were in Aspen. And then this year, I believe there are three events. So.
All right. So if they were invited, does he pay their travel costs?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We also had the snowboard team, in China?
Yep, snowboard was also at the Snow League. A young 17-year-old boy, Alessandro Barbieri. He's half Italian, half American, and is proving to be quite an amazing half-pipe rider. So it'll be a fun one to watch this year.
So who's he competing for?
For us,
okay.
Which is great. But it'll be interesting. He's fully fluent in Italian, so it'll be fun, hopefully, to have him over in Milano Cortina.
Right. Well, so will he get to, even though he may not qualify Team USA, would he?
No, compete? He would be with us. Okay. And hopefully he'll qualify. I think, you know, watching him in the Snow League, it feels like it's a possibility.
Okay. Let's talk about the para-athletes as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. Para-athletes have been great. They just got started. The Paris snowboard folks were at an indoor ski arena in the Netherlands and acquired quite a few results. Noah Elliott had a couple of wins. He's known as the king of banked slalom, so it's pretty unbeatable. And then Kate Delson and Zach Miller both had two podiums.
Awesome. Okay. And also in Trondheim, Norway, was the Nordic combined team.
Yeah, we had our first World Cup podium in 5 years, which is amazing. Alexa Brabeck grabbed, I believe, third. Which is, really, really cool and shows a lot of good potential for the Nordic combined folks.
Okay. Again, this is kind of the freestyle cross-country race along combined with a ski jump.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a skate ski and a ski jumping, which is a crazy combination of sports, but is one of the original Olympic events.
Okay. But still only
men. I know, which is disappointing, but, you know, the women are fighting for their rights here and are skiing really well.
All right. And let's see. Olympics, of course, coming. And we're, of course, Michaela Schifrin qualifying, Jesse Diggins qualifying, and others as well.
Yeah, we qualified a few at the end of last season. So Alex Hall, who's from here, Alex Ferreira, who is free ski halfpipe, Quinn Dellinger, Aerials, Jalen Koff, Moguls, and Chloe Kim and Red Gerard, who are both snowboarders, have all already qualified. So we'll see them popping in and out of qualifying events this season. But we are regularly announcing athletes that are going to be making the team, and the Olympics are 60 days away.
Okay. Will you be headed to Milan Cortina?
Yes, I will be. It'll be quite a long stretch in Italy between the Olympics and the Paralympics. But, you know, Italy's not a bad place to be for a month and a half, so could be worse.
You'll be there 6 weeks, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then the venues there, are all of the ski venues together, or it seems pretty spread out?
They are so spread out. So, I mean, pretty much everything is between 4 and 6 hours away from each other. Women's alpine is 6 hours away from men's alpine. It'll be an interesting way of getting around those tiny mountain roads in Italy.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention, Courtney?
No, I think that's it. Please tune in this season. You know, we have all of our how to watch on our website and on our social media. It's a little complicated just due to governing rights, but everything is live streamed, and our athletes, I know, would love for you all to cheer them on.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Courtney Harkins, again, is the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Director of Communications. Park City Ballet's West Academy once again rehearsing for their annual Nutcracker performance at the Park City Eccles Theater. On the phone with details, I have the campus principal, Allison DeBona. Good morning, Allison. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so give us just a little bit of history here, how the Park City Academy is associated with Ballet West.
Yeah, so we have actually four campuses across Utah, and Park City is one of those campuses, and we just moved to Silver Summit in August. We've been on Rasmussen Road since 2021, and so we're just proud to represent Ballet West and its long history.
All right, so what do you offer for both youth and adults?
We have classes from ages 3 all the way to 20 for ballet training, and it's the same curriculum as the downtown campus, so you're getting the best of Ballet West in your neighborhood. We also have tap, jazz, hip-hop, contemporary, and musical theater. And for adults, we are starting some classes that are more regular, but we're going to be launching a beginner series in January. It's a six-week series that you commit to, and you learn the fundamentals of ballet so you can get your body started in the program.
Okay. Well, Ballet West is currently in the midst of its Nutcracker run at Capitol Theater. You're also offering, an abridged production locally?
Yeah, so if people don't know it, Ballet West has America's very first Nutcracker. And so it is a long, long history. We're actually in our 75th season of the Nutcracker with the main company downtown. And so my goal in Park City was to offer our students a similar experience. So it is abridged. It's just about an hour, and with an intermission, you're out of there in an hour and 15 minutes, but it does not take away any of the divertissements or the story. So it's the full story. We've just made some of the sections shorter, like the party scene is a little shorter, the battle scene and stuff like that. But we really wanted to make sure that the kids understood how it all went and the experience was the same. So one day when they're with the professional company, they know exactly what they're walking into.
Yeah. How many dancers do you have involved in this local production?
We have 150 kids in each cast. We have two casts.
Oh my goodness.
So it's pretty exciting. I know. And our battle scene has 30 children under the age of 8. And I swear there's nothing cuter than seeing a bunch of mice and soldiers who are just so small with these big props. We have toy spoons and forks and knives that are basically as big as their bodies. So it really brings a story to life, and it's super cute.
Okay, so basically everybody who dances at the academy participates, huh?
So we actually have 270 kids at the academy right now. And so all of our ballet students from elementary A through level 8 are in the Nutcracker. We do have some young babies who signed up to be baby mice. But our secondary classes like contemporary, jazz, hip-hop, they don't participate in the Nutcracker unless they're in the ballet program. They will perform in the spring, however.
Wonderful. All right. It's always such a big deal to land the role of Clara. Do students have to audition for this?
So My philosophy is if they're at the school and I'm seeing them and I'm teaching them every day of the week, they don't need to audition. Every day counts towards earning a role like Clara. So we do cast two young ballerinas in level one in the role of Clara, and they're both Park City locals. And so they're very, very excited. But also in our version, we have an older Clara. So we give as many dancers the opportunity to understand what that leading role feels like. So we have two dancers who are in level two, who are the older Claras in the second act, and it's the same process.
All right. And you also do incorporate, I think, some of the dancers from your Ballet West core to play, you know, the Sugar
We Pumpkin. Actually, no. Oh. So one, we have our own students in Park City dancing the principal roles of the Sugar Plum Fairy and of the Snow Queen, two of our senior dancers who are at Park City High School. Sky Rowley and Quinn Crackalise. We're very proud of that. But we did bring up three trainee gentlemen from Ballet West. So they're the kids that are next to get into the company. So it's been a wonderful experience. They've been learning the pas de deux, and we've been working with them on the weekend. So it's been a lot of fun.
Awesome. So how many performances will there be, and when and where?
So our two performances are next Saturday, December 13th at 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. at the Echo Center in Park City. Tickets are $18 for adults, but for children under 11 years old, it's just $5. And I do encourage, if you have a baby in arms, you're still welcome to come. I really want the community to understand that this is a family event, and it's the beginning of a tradition that we hope continues. So if you have young families and you want to try to see if they can hang in a Nutcracker production, come up to Park City, and then within a few years, they'll be downtown at the main production, America's First Nutcracker.
Right. So tickets are on sale at this point?
They are on sale online at academy.balletwest.org, or you can buy tickets right at the door, so no need to hassle on your phone or a computer. You can just show up.
Okay. You'll have tickets. Usually you filled up.
Yes. Yes. I know. We're trying everything to make it accessible for people. We know during the season it's crazy, right? And for families as well, you know, it's like, oh, you know, can we make it? Can we make it? Maybe it's a last-minute decision. Get your family there. Have them dress up in your plaid and your cute outfits, and let's see the Nutcracker.
So what were some of the roles, or if any, that you performed with Ballet West at Ballet?
Yeah, so I danced for Ballet West for 15 years, and it's really funny, but considering our Park City Nutcracker, I have now done every single role in the Nutcracker except for the Cavalier since I was a child. That includes the Nutcracker. I was the Mouse King last year in our own production. We have a Chinese lion, and my husband and I are the head and the butt of the lion. So we really invest pretty much everything we have to make this production what it is for the kids. And so, yeah, I've done every single role.
Wow. Okay.
In the Nutcracker.
That's impressive.
My 42 years of life. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's fun. I actually think it's pretty cool.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to tell us?
No, just like I said, everybody's welcome. Just come and enjoy the holidays with Ballet West Academy.
Yeah. It's really, they do a terrific job. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
I've attended for years. Yeah. I think it's fun.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. We have a lot of fun, and I think that's at the core of it. We still enjoy it. We're obsessed with ballet. We love what we do. And I think it shows when we put everything into a production like the Nutcracker Suite.
Okay. Allison, thank you.
You're welcome. Take care.
Allison DeBona again with the Park City Ballet West Academy. The Swanna Preserve and Eco Center hosting a wild winter art market along with a wetland supermarket. And in the studio with details, the director of exhibits and visitor experience, Hunter Klingensmith. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so between now and January 4th, the Swanna is got the wetland supermarket open. Tell us about this exhibition.
Yeah. So this exhibition is designed for kiddos. And we really thought of the idea thanks to Robin Wall Kimmerer's book, Braiding Sweetgrass. She has a chapter called Wall Marsh, where she talks about how wetlands are like the supermarkets of the natural world. They're where wildlife get the things that they need. They provide a ton of resources just for our ecosystems. And we thought, what a fun way to make a play exhibit where you learn about what resources are on wetlands and what animals live there. So you can come into, it's set up like a grocery store play space, but it's full of wetland resources. So there are things like snakes and mice and twigs and sticks and clean water and all kinds of fun stuff like that. You can dress up like a wetland animal, get a shopping list for that animal, try to find all of the things that that wildlife would use from a wetland. We have tiny shopping carts and baskets and a checkout station and all kinds of fun stuff. So that'll be there through January 4th, but that's an in-house exhibit, so people will be bringing it back seasonally for years and years to come.
Okay, is there a fee to
Nope, that one's free.
Okay, and let's see, what else have you got coming up then? The market is the Wild Winter Market. Now, this is just a one night only, huh?
Yeah, this is one night only. This is our second year doing it. We used to do one long, long ago, and then we started bringing in exhibits kind of in the fall time that would take up our space for a market. But we've switched to doing our big exhibits in the spring, which leaves open space in the exhibit hall, although we'll be moving the Wetland Supermarket out and putting it right back in when it's done. But just an evening event. The goal is to highlight local artists whose work highlights the beauty of the natural world. And it's Friday, December 19th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Eco Center. We'll close the Eco Center early that day at 1 p.m. for setup. And it's free admission. There's no charge to come in. And we really just want to encourage people to shop with intention, choose gifts that reflect care for both people and the planet, and then to bring community together and celebrate creativity that's rooted in nature. So we're excited to have that back in our space.
All right. So what are people going to find?
We have 23 artists that will be there. We have everything from ceramics to paintings to jewelry to printmaking. We have some fiber artists. There's bags, hats, crochet wall hangings that are really cool. We have a soap maker there. We have someone who makes baby clothing, all nature inspired, some woodblock prints, some really cool jewelry, and some stained glass. So wide variety of things. We had a ton of applicants. It was really hard to pick the artists. There's so many great, great people out there. But we're excited to invite everyone into the Eco Center.
Okay, so it's a juried event, huh?
Yeah, we have a committee of staff that kind of vote to for us to decide who's into the market.
Okay. So again, one night only, Friday, December 19th, 5 to 8 p.m.
Yep, that's it.
And then what about just the Swatter? What are your regular hours where people could come see the Wetland Supermarket?
Yeah, we're open Wednesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We're donation-based, so no fee to come in. We have binoculars people can borrow. They can go out onto the preserve. We have our regular Saturday morning nature walks. Those are from 9:30 to 10:30 now. And then we have a few other fun things coming up this Friday, December 12th. We're doing a creature feature family program. We're partnering with the Ogden Nature Center. They'll bring a few of their critters down for participants to meet. So we have special guest presenters from there, about a 45-minute presentation followed by an informal meet and greet with the live animals, which should be really fun. That one, we are suggesting that you register in advance because space is limited for the show. And general admission is $5. Members get in for $3, and two and under are free. So you can just show up, and if we have space, we'll let you in. You can pay at the door. But you can also register on our website in advance. And then the Christmas bird count is on Sunday, December 14th from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. This is an annual census of birds that's performed all over the country by volunteer birders. This is for the Park City one. We'll meet at the Eco Center, but then for coffee and snacks, and then head out to different locations all over Park City to count birds. And that one is not a guided event, so we suggest that you come enthused and ready to look for birds and have some resources to look for them, but participants will drive or carpool with others to their assigned location, and we're just asking that people email Rhea Cohn. It's rhea.cohn@usu.edu if you want to participate.
Okay, so you're counting birds. You don't need to know what they are, but
The goal is to, we're counting and marking what birds are where in what locations, and it's a countrywide event, so it's pretty fun to see.
Okay, and then when they fly, how do you know you're not counting 4 or 5 times?
That's a question for Rhea. You'll have to ask her on the email. I have not been on this one yet, but you go out, there will always be expert birders in the group. There's a lot of expert birders that participate. So if you're not an expert birder yet, but you're really getting into birding, this is a great event to come to. And just have a chance to interact with other Utah birders.
Okay, so that's next Sunday.
Next Sunday,
and is there a cost to that?
Nope, that one's free.
All right, anything else? Any other events?
Those are all the big things coming up. The other thing is just that the Eco Center will be closed from the 24th of December all the way through to the new year. So we are trying out a new thing this year. We haven't been closed through that holiday stretch before, but we're going to see how it goes and give our staff a little break during that time. Everyone has worked really hard this year through our strategic planning process and getting new exhibits happening and up. So we're going to take a little break over the holidays, and then we'll be back at the beginning of the new year.
All right. So you don't see much of the tourist market visit you then,
We
huh?
see some visitation, but it's definitely not our busiest time. We tend to pick up a little bit more, like mid-January is kind of our busiest time. And we have a new exhibit opening. I don't have the exact date, but mid-January, I think it's January 25th. Called Life on the Edge, and that one we'll have through May. So once that exhibit is in our space, we see a lot more visitation.
Okay.
So we'll miss everyone over that time, but we're excited to give our staff a little break.
So when are you opening then?
We January? Open on, I apologize,
the
I should have had
Saturday.
This there.
Oh.
I think we open Friday the
2nd. The 2nd. Okay.
Yep.
All right. And I was just going to mention too, you've got a gift shop in the,
yeah.
the museum, so people could actually also... Look
yeah.
Christmas
yeah,
gifts.
We've got Bree, who does all of our shopping for the gift shop, has really loaded it up with lots of fun books, games, activities. We have things for adults, really cute little birdhouses and ornaments, some nice jewelry. So, yeah, that will be open for the market and is open every all the time that we're open. So we'd love to see people there for holiday shopping.
Okay. Hunter Klingensmith, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, residents in a remote area of Summit County near Wyoming have been paying thousands of dollars to maintain a single public road. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that relief is just around the corner.
A handful of residents in Upton, up Chalk Creek Road from Colville near Wyoming, have been paying $5,000 each to maintain what is a public paved county road. After they alerted the Summit County Council last fall, staff gradually started reducing its $773,000 Chalk Creek Road maintenance budget to provide interim relief. Now, Summit County Manager Shane Scott says they're poised to eliminate the tax entirely.
I think it had maybe a Rolls Royce level of maintenance before, and we're going to cut it back to maybe more of a Cadillac or a Kia.
Honda.
The county will still plow and maintain the surface of Chalk Creek Road and absorb the cost into its Public Works Department budget. Chalk Creek runs through what's known as Service Area 8. The taxing district was formed during a 1980s oil boom, and oil companies initially covered the lion's share of maintenance costs. But as oil production slowed, the company's land became less valuable. At the same time, the residences in the service area ballooned in value by comparison, and so did their tax bills. By 2024, 9 year-round households were paying a combined $47,000. Resident Tyler Orgill told the council at the time it was 57% of the group's total tax bill. That road tax is not in the county's draft fiscal year 2026 budget anymore. The council will vote on the budget December 10th. Council Chair Tanya Hansen says she'd like to just tax the oil companies and not the residents, but that's not a legal option right now.
Legally, anyone who is in a service area, you're all in it together, kumbaya, right? And you cannot just separate some people or some companies that might be able to afford a higher tax. That just isn't fair. So it's all or none. And that's unfortunate.
Service Area 8 is not being dissolved just yet. Its budget will simply be zero. Summit County's a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And Park City officials say the application process for a vacancy on the city council will open to locals as soon as Mayor-elect Ryan Dickey formally resigns. Dickey, who holds one of the 5 council seats, was selected by voters as the city's next mayor in November. He's expected to formally resign after the council's December 18th meeting. Utah law gives the council 30 days to appoint a qualified resident to fill Dickey's seat until his term expires January 2028. The city must also provide at least 14 days of public notice before the council conducts interviews with candidates during an open public meeting. Applications are expected to open by December 23rd and will be accepted through January 5th. Eligible applicants must be registered Park City voters, have a primary residence within city limits, and lived in town for at least 1 year prior to their appointment.